Before continuing with texts that illustrate the tradition of vision and ascent, as well as biblical texts concerned with the Christian contemplative tradition, I thought it would be useful for us to review these very basic but fundamental and important categories of apophatic and cataphatic theology. These are not ancient terms. You would never have found any of the fathers or mothers of the tradition, Gregory of Nyssa or Origen, describing themselves as apophatic and cataphatic. These terms are taken from the Greek words for denial, in the case of apophatic theology, and affirmation, in the case of cataphatic theology. And it is true that many of the early writers in the Christian mystical tradition can be described as falling closer to one end or the other of these two different, mutually complementary and mutually enhancing ways of speaking about God. For example, Evagrius Ponticus and Origen were very much mystics of light. They would strongly emphasize the cataphatic tradition, the use of images and words. Dionysius the Areopagite, in his mystical theology at least, and Gregory of Nyssa, for example, would often feel comfortable speaking about God in the language of mystical darkness, an experience of God that transcends all of our words or images and requires us to let go of the things we think we know. However, in all of these authors, examples can be found of both of these ends of the spectrum, and it's not fair to characterize anyone as being exclusively one or the other, but they are very important and useful terms for our discussion, and it's well that we review them. In this page, I have given, by way of review, both a description of these terms and two poems. The first poem towards the bottom, probably the bottom of the first screen that you have, or a little further down, is by Henry Vaughan, and it is an example of cataphatic, or way of affirmation theology. Vaughan belonged to the group called the Metaphysical Poets in Britain, and his poem is appropriately titled The World. I saw eternity the other night, like a great ring of pure and endless light. All calm it was and bright, and round beneath it time in hours, days, years, driven by the spheres like a vast shadow moved, in which the world and all her train were hurled. Here, God is praised in the language of affirmation, of complexity, of multiplicity, of colors, of immense diversity. He uses the language of the spheres, which we have seen and will see again in the images of the ascent through the heavens. Earth surrounded by the complex spheres of heaven, and the language of light being used to describe God. This is one way of speaking about God, but another, equally important, is the apophatic tradition, the setting aside of all images and words, recognizing the final limitation of all language, including theological language, before the majesty of God, whose, as it is sometimes said, brightness is so great that it seems to us as a kind of darkness. And in his poem, The Night, Vaughan says, "There is in God, some say, a deep but dazzling darkness. As men here say it is late and dusky, because they see not all clear. Oh, for that night, where I in him might live invisible and dim." Notice that it's the language of a bright darkness, this paradoxical language which this poet takes from Dionysius the Areopagite, the dazzling, the bright, the scintillating paradoxical darkness of God. And he also uses nuptial imagery, the image of the embrace, that I might live in him and he in me. It's the language of the lover's embrace, those who reach and embrace one another and then with eyes closed simply experience beyond word that which the other is. This is our experience of God. Sometimes today we refer to this poll as contemplation or contemplative prayer, but as we saw in the article on the subject of Are we contemplatives? In fact, the language of contemplation embraces both cataphatic and apophatic experience. To speak of contemplation or contemplative prayer only with reference to the apophatic pole is an impoverishment and a very great error from the standpoint of the early tradition. Contemplation includes both the beholding of God in multiplicity and color and complexity, in poetry and in song, and also the laying aside of images, letting go of all of these things. And as we'll see, the spiritual practices that are most important for monastics are those which enable us to do both, especially things like Lectio Divina that encourages a rhythmic movement back and forth between these poles. And if you drop down to the chart towards the bottom of this web page, you'll see a kind of a classification of different spiritual practices as primarily apophatic or cataphatic. And if you look towards the bottom, you'll see that Lectio Divina includes both of these experiences, as we'll describe in more detail. I've put liturgical prayer to the right in the cataphatic pole, the way of affirmation and of multiplicity, but in fact, insofar as our public worship and our liturgy can and should include silence, it can and should include an apophatic dimension, a time of simple resting in quiet in the Lord. This is, again, an introduction to these terms that will help us both to use them in describing spiritual authors and various aspects of their work, but it's also something I felt the need to highlight here because all reading that you do in the area of Christian spirituality will include reference to these terms. We now turn to biblical examples from both the Old and New Testament that illustrate both these poles and which were of fundamental importance to the early Christian mystical writers and especially to the monastic mystical writers.